Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Rajesh Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. Gvome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique Gvome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician. We're talking about regrets before dying.
Yeah, absolutely. This is interesting. It may be a little sad to talk about, but I hope we can end on a happy note.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot to learn from people when they're at the end of their life, because they're thinking about the things that they could have done differently. I do think about these sorts of things. Like, am I perseverating on, and I think a lot of us have these challenges. Am I worrying about this too much? Are there things that I could be doing differently? And I used to really think about these things when I was especially going through undergrad and then graduating, but now I've let life come to me a bit. But it is fun. It is really, I think, eye-opening to look at what people think about. And it's also a chance for reflection. I think it really helps us introspect.
I agree. I think that's a great mindset to have, to continue to be thinking about these things. You know, I think a lot of times people just get caught up in life and get caught up in the moment. And so they just carry on with how they have normally been thinking and normally going throughout their day-to-day lives. And I think to take a step back and to really see these and talk about these topics is, I hope, eye-opening for some people.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this came out when Bronnie Ware, Australian nurse and counselor, looks like she wrote a book. And that focused on five things that people most commonly regretted before dying. And I thought it'd be really interesting for us to just go through this and reflect upon, you know, what we've seen with our patients or even in ourselves. Should we take a gander through these five?
Yeah, let's do it.
I think they're pretty telling. So the first one that I think a lot of us probably can relate to is, I wished I pursued my dreams and aspirations and not the life others expected of me. And what Bronnie did in this particular book is she spoke to people that were close to death to see if there's anything they would have done differently if life had given them a second chance to do over some of the decisions that they'd made or relive or re-choose some of the paths that they took. So number one was just about pursuing dreams and aspirations and not what others expected of them. And I think this is one that we can all relate to, especially growing up, because our parents and our communities definitely put certain pressures on us. And I think it's really important to pay attention to that.
I agree, especially in the realm of medicine. You know, you look at someone, their mom was a doctor, their dad was a doctor, their sister's a doctor. And so they've kind of been held to that expectation of becoming a doctor. And sometimes people just go through that without even taking a step back and realizing, is this going to fulfill all of my aspirations in life?
You know, I personally struggled with this one early because I was very interested in medicine and I've always been interested in service. And one of the questions that I had for myself was, am I doing medicine because it's what people think that, because I'm of Indian descent and it's almost a caricature to say, oh my God, so many doctors are Indian. Nobody in my family was a doctor. In fact, my dad wanted me to go into computer science and do programming, but that just wasn't my cup of tea. But I remember the first time I applied to medical school and I didn't get in. And sometimes, you know, things happen for a reason. And I thought, okay, so maybe, you know, maybe medicine wasn't the right path for me, or maybe there's other things I could be doing. And I went to grad school and I still remember the epiphany. And it was when my dad really struggled with a lot of his health issues and he ended up passing away when I was in the midst of medical school soon thereafter. But I remember he went through a bad health scare and really just changed everything. And I realized, you know, I'm going down this path where I'm going to go to grad school and go probably work in an engineering job. I was an engineering grad student at the time. But I realized that isn't what I wanted to do. And I had to retake the MCAT and retake all this testing. But it just felt right. And sometimes even if the path is uphill, sometimes it just feels right. I don't know if you've had any experience with this, Ashley. But I know that was something that really was eye-opening and changed my perspective on how to live life.
Yeah, I had a similar situation where neither of my parents were doctors, and I had an internal motivation to become a doctor. I'm not quite sure why, but it was always there in me. And so I took that path just because I had that inner passion. But I know my best friends growing up in high school, she was valedictorian of our senior class. And I remember she got a Fulbright scholarship to her nursing program, and everyone was going to ask her when she was going to go to NP school, nurse practitioner school. And she was just like, I just want to be a nurse. This is what makes me happy. This is what I've always wanted right. to do. I don't want to take that next step. So I can see someone as bright as she is to be under that kind of pressure, for sure.
Yeah, it's easy to feel pressure. When I was at Berkeley, I used to TA for organic chemistry. And I remember there was one time when I went around the classroom and said, hey, what do you guys want to do? Where are you all headed? And a lot of people said they were going to go into medicine. And it's always fun for me to find out, so what's the reason and what's driving you to do mm-hmm. that? And I'd ask them, why are you thinking about medicine? What's the passionate motivation behind all of this? And actually, it was kind of surprising. A lot of them said, oh, it's because my parents want me to. Oh, and yeah. it turned out that a lot of them ended up dropping out of the medicine path, and other folks kind of stuck with it. And not everyone, a lot of other folks also decided that they were going to go into architecture, they were going to go into graphic design, or they were going to go into business. And I felt like, you know, somehow, somewhere along the way, you find what your passion is. But it sometimes can feel challenging too, if you feel that little twinge of guilt that you might be letting other people down that believe in you. And it's a tough one, because I feel like in the end, people still are going to support you if you're successful, if you're happy. But it is a challenge when you're young. And sometimes it's not the case. Sometimes parents put a lot of pressure on you. Or it's not even parents. It's like the community puts a lot of pressure on you that you're around. So it's important to be cognizant of those things.
Absolutely. And even finding what you're passionate about takes time. It doesn't come quickly to everyone. And I think that some people may have guilt around that. They've maybe gone to undergrad and still kind of unsure about what they want to do. And I think that there's maybe some guilt that they should know exactly what they want to do. And that's not the case. I think that it's such an individual process, and it takes time for each person to really figure out where they're headed and what their destiny is.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is, if you have an inner voice that's telling you that this isn't the right path, or more importantly, if you have an inner voice telling you that, hey, there's a path over there, and I think that's the one that's going to feel right, sometimes listening to your heart is really important. And if you listen early enough, it can align with your head in the long run. So I think sometimes we suppress those feelings, but then I think we pay the price for it long term. And I think it even causes instability, disharmony. And sometimes we won't even know why we have disharmony, but it could be as basic as understanding that you need to be on a path. And if you're not on that path, you're not going to be passionate. And that right there is a real challenge to succeed.
Absolutely. Even when you said about the people who didn't make it all the way through their program, and it sounds like there has to be some kind of intrinsic motivation to really get through that and to have that passion underlying.
Yeah. So let's move on to number two, because these are really interesting ones. So the second one was, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings and speak my mind. What do you think about this one, Ashley? I think it's an interesting one, because we want to speak up. And is there an element of maybe remembering the past without realizing there's nuances and everything? Because sometimes people don't speak there's many reasons why you don't speak. And sometimes we want to keep the peace. But what do you think? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I actually, when I read this, I found this one to be very interesting. It later talks about and brings attention to the point where people don't want to get into confrontations with others because they may think that that confrontation may turn negative. And I think that the word confrontation in itself has a negative connotation. But I think that, I mean, society and cultural and relational aspects of your life can all have different forces on whether you're able to speak your mind. If you're with someone who's a friend and they may have a dominant personality and you don't feel like you're able to speak your mind in that way or have the courage, I just find it really interesting in that not every time that you speak your mind is going to come out to have a confrontation. And I think that there's a way to speak your mind that's respectful of everyone else's opinion and not lead into a confrontation.
What do you think about those situations where you do want to speak your mind, but just like you said, someone's dominant or you just don't feel safe? I feel that sometimes it's a balance between courage and then safety. And sometimes you're trying to focus on self-preservation, and maybe Is that the reason you self-regret? I mean, is that fair to ourselves to be, are we too hard on ourselves if we
Absolutely.
Really thought about it? Or do you think you should just always speak your mind?
No, I think that there's definitely a delicate balance with that. As you mentioned, the safety aspect, if there's someone who is, or who has a dominant personality, I think that we are all hard on ourselves. But I think in that aspect, you have to tread the waters lightly, I guess, and really enter every conversation differently. And if you're not able to speak your mind as you would like in that situation, hopefully there's another situation where you are able to, so that resent doesn't build up inside of you.
Yeah, I think there's no question that you don't want resentment building up inside, because you need an outlet for that. Well, let's go on to number three. I wish I didn't work so hard. You know, I wanted to put a caveat on this one personally. I feel like I wish I didn't work so hard at things that I didn't enjoy. And because I, for example, there are a lot of things that a lot of people might consider work for me. And I think that working on things that I'm passionate about has always been invigorating. But you know, that's how I used to think. But now I realize that actually it is really important to take a break, because I feel like the people around you, even if you're working and you're enjoying it, sometimes the people around you want to spend time in a way that isn't just focused on work. And I think mm-hmm. you can lose relationships, and this will tie into the next regret that comes up, but you can lose that balance and that, I think, that relationship that might be strengthened by doing things that aren't necessarily work related.
Exactly. And I think, again, in the realm of medicine, a lot of people have, I guess, long-term gratification where they know something exciting and great is going to happen. And so they really do work really hard, locking themselves in their room all weekend to study or something of that nature. Especially you don't know how that's affecting someone else who's a friend and not in the program, and you're trying to do something that's really exciting, and maybe it doesn't seem like work at the time, but it does take up a lot of your time, and they're really wanting to spend time with you in another way. I can definitely see that as well.
I think stress creeps up on you, whether you realize it or not. I think when you work really hard, there's still underlying stressors that are there, and whether you think you're stressed out or not, I think if you keep building and having low levels of stress that surround work and needing to get more and more work done, at some point it becomes an endless pit. And so I'm curious, Ashley, how did you smell the roses going through medical school? I know you're still in medical school, but there's something to be said for that, because some people say, I'm just going to get through this, and then I'm going to get to the end point, and then I'm going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that makes the whole path feel like work. And yeah. Maybe it is a lot of hard work. I'm curious, you know, how have you approached it?
You know, I actually originally had that mentality coming straight out of undergrad. I just kind of wanted to get it done and over with as fast as possible. But throughout the process, I've really started to notice that you're right. The subtle nuances of stress really do creep up on you until you feel incapacitated sometimes. And so you really have to take those moments and realize that you have to take a step back. And so things that I like to do. Sometimes I just like to play music in my house and just clean and dance and just do things like that. Just a really silly, just to get rid of some stress. Love to hang out with friends who are in the similar situations and just go outside and just enjoy the beautiful nature that's in Oregon. So those are some of the things that I like to do. But yeah, I've always had that kind of drive forward mentality until I realized that it's not sustainable.
You know, one of the things that I say now, when I think back to how hard I worked, even when I was thinking about medical school or applying for dermatology residency, there's so many hoops to jump through. One thing that I don't think I did a great job of doing was balancing the fact that I may be working hard, but other people really depend on time spent with them and mm-hmm. having that companionship. And I know that I didn't spend as much time with my current wife, thankfully. She's my current wife. But I didn't spend as much time. And I remember there were many moments where I would be in the lab or I would be thinking about experiments. And I realized like that's not a way to live. And in fact, it's one of the reasons why I didn't go into a very heavy basic science laden career within dermatology. Initially, when I was doing dermatology, I was thinking, gosh, I'm going to go into basic science. I'm going to do a lot of grant writing and cell culture. And I realized that took a lot of time away from two things: social interaction with people. And I realized that was super important for me, but then the interaction with my girlfriend and then wife. And I think I started to realize that was creeping up on me, and it was starting to weigh heavy on my heart. And it made me just less happy about things around me. And I realized that if I didn't listen to that early, I would really pay the price. And honestly, I didn't even think it really opened up for me until I started speaking to some of my older patients. I've learned so much from my mm-hmm. patients that are in their 80s and 90s. They just know how to put life in perspective. And it's really changed the way I think about life.
Well, I'm happy that you had that experience with your patients.
Yeah, it's so I guess for me, it's not I wish I didn't work so hard, but I think for me, it would be I wish I didn't work so hard on things that were clearly not important. Like, for example, in the very beginning of forget medical school, even before that, sometimes I'd want to really work on making sure I got like a 99% instead of a 98%. Maybe, you know, that's striving mm-hmm. for excellence. But when I think back, I'm like, you know, did that really matter that much? I don't think so.
But exactly.
Because it's all hindsight.
I just wish you knew that it wasn't important at the moment, right?
Like, exactly. Because you don't, that's true, right? Because you don't know in the moment that that's mm-hmm. not important. In the moment you think this is all important. And then you.
The most important thing ever.
Yeah. That's exactly right. The most important thing ever. Mm-hmm. So then this ties into the fourth one, which is I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends.
Oh, that's a sweet one.
That yeah.
I can relate to that for sure.
Well, tell us more about that.
Yeah. So I'm currently in Oregon. I'm from New Hampshire. So moved across the country to come here to school. And all of my friends, we're grown-ups now, I guess. So they have their jobs. And I do my hardest and try my best to really stay in touch with them and text them every so often as much as I can. And I think that it can be really challenging, of course. And communication is a two-way street. So I'm sure they also try their hardest to stay in touch with me. But when you're closer together as far as distance is concerned, I think it's easier to stay in touch with people. But say if you're ill or you're away, it's a lot harder. And those people bring me so much joy. So it's tough to be away from them. But I hope I can continue to stay in contact with them in the future.
I think this is one that really a lot of us will struggle with if we entered professional life. But even if you've moved away and you used to have good bonds, sometimes life catches up to you. And thankfully, I have to say, for all the negative press around social media and how social media might influence us or fake news, one of the things I'm really thankful for is that with Facebook and even with Instagram, but especially with Facebook, I was able to reconnect with mm-hmm. friends that I hadn't seen in years, and just flooded back all these happy memories, and just makes you feel a lot more full. And, you know, there's something about that, something about just reconnecting with people and sharing those memories again that just brings things to life. And I don't know if I would have ever gotten that if I didn't have social media. Maybe if this was 30 years ago and we didn't have this opportunity to connect with each other, I don't know if I would have stayed in touch. In fact, I probably wouldn't have. And it would have been one of those things where you think back and say, gosh, I did have a lot of friends along the way, and I wish I kept in touch. I feel like it's a tiny bit easier now, although it's not as personal.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. I think we're kind of all on our computers possibly, but it can definitely help us stay in touch as far as the distance is concerned. If you don't see them every day, you can check in on them every now and again and see pictures of them or pictures of you and them in the past. So I think that that's another great opportunity to stay in touch.
One of the things I do when I see patients in rooms is that I tend to linger. I've caught myself doing this now. I tend to linger and sit and listen a little bit longer to the folks that have almost lost all of their friends. Oh. And I try to listen to what they're telling me, because a lot of them, especially when they're 80s or 90s, I'll ask them, you know, how do you spend your day now? What do you do? And they'll say things like, you know, nowadays, a lot of my friends are gone. Oh. And a lot of my friends have died. There's that group of folks that say that, yeah, a lot of the people that I grew up with or that I spent a lot of my life with aren't around anymore. So I kind of just do my own thing. And sometimes I feel a little hint of, not just a little hint, I feel some sadness there, because mm-hmm. gosh, these people are still living and vibrant, but there's that loneliness. But then I see another group of people that are in their 80s and 90s, and they've somehow found a way to reconnect with people that are younger than them and just stay engaged. And they're definitely more vivacious, and they've got more energy and vitality. And I think one of the challenges that maybe we all have to realize, or something that I've been thinking more about, is, you know, as you get older, you can keep making friends from many different generations. You don't have to just stick to your own generation. And sometimes it's a generational gap, but maybe it's just a generational perspective. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I've been developing a lot more friends now that are in their, you know, a decade younger than me, or maybe a decade and a half younger than me. And I think I would have obviously never done this when I was in my 20s, because it would have been 5-year-olds. But, you know, it's different now that I'm, you know, crossing into almost hitting 40. And I do find a lot of really interesting people that are adults. I feel like there's a bigger pool of adults for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're all people. And no matter, you know, what the age gap is, we can all have something we can relate to, right? And so I think social interaction is so important, especially when you get older in age. And as you mentioned, there are some great resources out in the community for people who are older adults to really stay connected, whether it's, you know, a cool workout class or just going out to grab coffee at a local coffee shop or things like that, so that they can really keep that social interaction, because that is something that keeps us young and youthful and still engaged with our world around us.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. And then let's talk about number five, because this is really one that touched me pretty deeply. Mm. Number five, fifth regret that people had at the time of death: I wish I had let myself be happier. And I'm just going to say that one again. I wish I had let myself be happier. Now just think about that. That is pretty touching. And yeah, it's also pretty profound, I think.
Absolutely. The let myself part of that.
For a long time, I used to think happiness was a state, but that I had no control of getting there, that sometimes mm-hmm. I'd float in, sometimes you'd float out, sometimes you're angry, sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're lonely, sometimes you're not. And some of those things you can't control because of your environment. But it seems that a lot of the, especially when doing this research about the five regrets, it seems that a lot of these folks realized at the end of their lives that they felt that happiness was a choice and that they could make that choice to be happy. And I don't think that's something that's super intuitive until you stop to think about it.
Absolutely. Just thinking that you actually have a conscious decision whether you're happy or not, I think that's really profound. And I think a lot of us may get into this negative cyclic pattern of negative self-talk and doubt. And we're told that, you know, neurons that fire together wire together. So it's this reinforced through repetition. What we tell ourselves becomes true. And I think that just the idea that we can break that cycle by just thinking happier and then becoming happier, I think is really profound.
Yeah, because I think we think if I just make that extra buck, or if I make mm-hmm. that extra, if I get that extra car, or if I get that extra status or extra promotion, I'm going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the life of a medical student, isn't it? If I just get through this extra year and then I get to this extra graduation, I hate saying this, but yeah, there's mm-hmm. multiple graduations along the way. Or if I get through this extra test, or I get to this extra level of security with my job, then I'll be happy. And I think it's important to realize that you can be happy along the journey. And, you know, Ashley, I think this is why people should take a year off if they're going to go into a professional degree, whether it's medicine, or whether it's law, or if it's going to go into business. I really strongly feel that after you go through undergraduate, that you should take a year off, because I think it allows you to step back and experience life a little bit without always being on a path.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I had a friend throughout undergrad who studied abroad in London, and so I got to visit and travel a little bit with her, but she was traveling all over the place and just having such a great time, and really, I guess it's a little cliche, but really kind of discovering herself and discovering what made her be happy. And she's so independent and on her own, and she didn't need anybody else to make her happy. She was out there and doing all of the things. And I think that was a brilliant choice for her. If I were to go back, I would absolutely do that as well and travel more.
So what do you think is the key to happiness? Yes, it's a state of mind, but what do you think is the key to happiness, Ashley?
Oh my. You know, I like the idea of letting yourself be happy, letting yourself enjoy life, not putting such stringent rules. Oh, I can't eat this or I can't eat that. Just really being present in the moment and enjoying whoever is around you, whatever is around you, and just fully being there. I think that when you become present in the moment, you start to notice little things that you haven't noticed before, and the stress and the worry just kind of rolls away. But yeah, I think that that's the first step. I think that that's the first step, is just really embracing yourself, being who you are, and really accepting everything that's around you.
Yeah, I think for me, what I've learned along the way is, yes, being accepting. And I think it comes down to the one thing that I think is magic in this world, because I do believe in magic. I'm not being a quack here. I really do believe this. I think love is magic. I think that's proof that there's some level of magic. It's hard to really explain that with science. Yes, we have chemistry and we have chemical reactions that occur, but there's something about just the way you change spirit, the way you change your outlook on life. And so I think it comes down to love, and relationships are super important. And for me, that it's really changed the way I approach life and approach my patients. Even my patients, you know, I used to think, oh gosh, this is going to be a challenging conversation, or this is going to be a really challenging time to get through to a patient. Believe it or not, I'm less closer to burnout now than I've ever been before, meaning I don't think I'm ever going to burn out, because I've somehow found the joy in talking to patients and finding what it is that they love. Somehow, I didn't realize this, but talking about that made me start to feel a bit more connected to them as a person. You know, sometimes you don't get through to a patient, or they don't understand, or sometimes it's me that doesn't understand. But I think allowing that level of empathy to rise from that love really creates a better bond. And, you know, is it always a perfect scenario? No. But I feel like that's been the key factor for me, is just believing in love and letting love happen. So maybe I'm a sap, Ashley.
No, but I love that. Not to say love again, but no, I think that is really profound. And having those connections and relationships can really help you and keep you happy and healthy. Absolutely.
So I guess maybe the take on life is, if can you live a life without regret? Is that possible? I don't know if that's possible, because we're constantly going to learn, and we're going to maybe you don't call it regret and you call it a lesson, and you constantly evolve. You know, I don't know what your perspective on regret is.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that, you know, something in our life, maybe we wish we could have done better, but I agree. It should be a lesson, and you learn from it. And I think that the goal is maybe to have as few regrets as possible, and to live the life that when you look back on it in however many years, you're proud of yourself and you're happy, and that you would do it all over again the same way.
So if you're thinking about being vital and being full of energy, then I think the important thing is, don't, if you know this isn't the right path, or you know this isn't the right set of relationships that are going to make you vital, or if you know that this just doesn't feel right, I think if we listen to our heart a bit more often than our head, I think that it would lead to better mental health and physical health and spiritual health. And I think at the end of the day, that makes all the difference.
Absolutely. I mean, we have that gut feeling and gut instinct for a reason, right? And I think that we should follow it as much as possible. For sure.
Well, Ashley, that was great talking about regrets. Hopefully we won't have any regrets as we go forth. And we'll hopefully learn from what we found from talking to people that were close to death.
Absolutely.
All right, Ashley, great doing this with you. We'll do more.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast, brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at gvome.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.